coming up on podcast 1251, Tesla posting record revenue and profits for the third quarter. It's one of those financial shows, but we never go too deep on this podcast. Just the headlines. Stick around, I'll tell you more. Yeah, loads of Tesla news dominates today. We're talking safety scores and run rates and things like that. But also there's room for Audi RS e-trons and Apteras on the podcast today. So stick around for lots of news. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Thursday, 21st of October. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to, depending on whether this is Wednesday's news for you or Thursday's news for you, your time zone, etc. Yesterday was really about Tesla's record revenue and profits in the third quarter. Now, there are loads of great Tesla financial podcasts out there, really aimed at those people who have their investment, their pensions, their net worth, etc., invested in the stocks and shares of Tesla. They see the company through a certain filter, and that's fine. Lots of their listeners want to hear the pro stuff. I recommend those for the really in-depth financial stuff. We always like to take a look at it on this show, though, because it is part of the global story around the electrification of transport. Now, Tesla reporting $1.62 billion in GAAP net income for the quarter. Let's compare that to a year ago, year on year for the same quarter. It was $331 million, same time last year. $1.62 billion net income this quarter. Second time it surpassed a billion, by the way. And the record results driven by improved gross margins on their automotive business. Now, Tesla doesn't have the kind of margins of software services companies in Silicon Valley. That's, you know, the holy grail. But equally, they haven't got the margins of more, I would say, old-fashioned car makers that are well known for stamping bits of metal into certain shapes and sticking an engine in the front. They've got margins that only those companies could dream of. Gross margin of 30.5% on their automotive business, which is stunningly impressive, and 26% overall, both of which are records for at least the last five quarters. CNBC writes, automotive revenue rose $12 billion, and costs of automotive revenue announced amounted to $8.38 billion. This is all for the quarter, by the way. Tesla generated $806 million in revenue from their energy business. So from that, we're talking solar panels, solar tiles, power walls, power packs, mega packs, etc., storage. And they generated $894 million in the quarter in services. And that includes things like when you take your car back in to be repaired or servicing, Tesla Rangers, auto insurance, and even if you buy yourself a Tesla t-shirt, of which I've got one, wasn't wearing it today, that's bad laundry planning on my part for a Tesla show, all of that, £894 million worth of tequila bottles, maybe not all of that, but a chunk. Well, Tesla was aided by $279 million worth of regulatory credits sold to rivals, whether that is the ZEV credits in the US or credits around the world. Here we are experiencing a similar thing, not called the same thing, but car companies are pooling together to avoid CO2 fines. And so they had a big deal with Stellantis. They got a big deal with VW in China for something similar. You know, there was a time when those people who want to see the company fail wanted to tell everyone that Tesla only existed because they were selling regulatory credits. When they made a profit, they would tell you they only made a profit because of regulatory credits. And now they're making a huge profit. And that argument seems to have gone away, which I'm delighted about. The number falling for the second straight quarter in a row. Really interesting thing about this. Like I say, there are some great financial podcasts out there, which I dip into. I don't own automotive stocks and shares. Maybe I do through my pension indirectly. I wouldn't know. But I couldn't to do this job because it would bias me. But there are plenty of great financial podcasts out there that are, you know, whether they say they're independent or unbiased, they're not, because the presenters of that have money invested. So inevitably there is bias. So go and listen to those if you want, like, the deep dive into these numbers. But I did notice one thing, really. Even with those podcasts, there was less of a fanfare. Like, the YouTube figures were down on the videos that I normally watch because there was no Elon Musk factor. Like, you know, he normally turns up on these calls, and that does bring a frisson of excitement. Like, what's he gonna say? This was very much more, well, a financial earnings call, which was inevitably with the suits and the nerds, and actually quite boring, and probably the way that financial calls should be. But you never know what grenade Elon Musk was going to throw over the trenches and then run away. And so that was interesting that he wasn't on it, and so there was just less reporting, less excitement around it. But that's probably no bad thing. Like, he does stir it up enough on Twitter at the minute. The CFO, Zach Kirkhorn, said the company was on track to achieve 50% year-over-year growth. There is still a big growth story at Tesla, 50% growth year-over-year, although fourth quarter production will be hampered by chip shortage and supply chain issues, they said. Automotive News Europe writing that Zach said Tesla planned to begin production of assembly at Texas and Germany before the end of the year, but no customer cars coming out of those factories. The EV maker will not deliver vehicles, they say, from the factories until 2022. I'll pop a link to those stories in the show notes if you'd like to read more. One of the details that came out from the call was that nearly 150,000 Teslas are now using the safety score. So, for those people that saw the button, capital T, capital B, and wanted to opt in to the full self-driving beta, then they didn't get access to that software, but they got judged on 5 safety metrics. It was a tool rolled out last month to determine what kind of driver they were. If they got 100 score, they got the full self-driving software. And there's now 150,000 of those people in the safety score, you know, trial, if you like. So it's interesting, you know, because you wonder, oh, does everybody who has paid for full self-driving over the years also, you know, do they all hit the button? Do they all want to be part of it? Well, no, not really. I mean, that number's pretty small. There's 2 million Teslas on the road. Not sure how many of those 2 million Teslas have got full self-driving, but only 150,000 of them said, hey, I'd like the full software, please. TechCrunch saying that while 150,000 are now part of the enrollment program, a fraction have actually got the software. 2,000 drivers so far testing out the new full self-driving software. Earlier this month, they rolled out version 10.2 to 1,000 people, and then they will grant access to another 1,000 people this weekend. And this is probably where, and I know it's where, because Tesla fans email me or tweet me and say they don't like this part of my podcast, and I'm sorry. This just really annoys me. Like, if you're going to call a product beta, it shouldn't be a public beta. You can have public betas of iOS, because if you're not paying attention and the phone crashes, you might lose an email. There shouldn't be a public beta of a 2-ton machine that, if you're not paying attention, can kill someone. And you are absolutely relying on the drivers paying attention. Now, there are some really good Tesla drivers, and there are some bad ones, and they get taken out of the beta program. But in that time, I don't know. It's been a really sore point for me. No problem calling something beta, but if it's a safety product, and it's like a car is a lethal weapon if it's not driven right. And I don't know. I have a huge unease about this. The technology's amazing. I love what they're doing. Just use professional drivers inside the company until it's ready. And then say, hey, ta-da, we did a thing. It's ready. I don't know. You're relying on how good your customers are at driving. I don't think the safety score goes far enough, but hey, we can argue that one. Please don't hate me. We can argue that one on social media. Next, Tesla is achieving an annual run rate of 1 million electric cars, confirming that their annual run rate, in other words, how many could they make every year if all their factories were running at full pelt, that is 1 million cars a year. Now, we know that there are 2 million Teslas on the road right now, and the run rate is 1 million a year. So you can see that if they're talking about 50% year-on-year growth, how that number just continues to rise. After Tesla reported production of 238,000 odd vehicles and delivery of 241,000 vehicles in the quarter just gone, Tesla has achieved now a run rate of 1 million vehicles, confirming that fact. Says Electrek websites. Zach Kirkhorn, the CFO, said, and I quote, "We were also able to achieve an annualized production rate of over 1 million cars towards the end of the quarter. The increase in production has been primarily driven by further ramping of Model Y at Giga Shanghai. Additionally, we've made great progress in increasing production volume of the Model S and have recently started production and ramp of Model X." End quote. Pop a link to Electrek in the show notes to read more. Next, we'll talk about Tesla switching their battery chemistry to lithium iron phosphate for all standard range vehicles. I've been banging on about this for ages. All car makers, for their cheapest models, for their city cars, for their lowest range, they should all have had LFP contracts in the bag years ago, because they can lower the price of the vehicle or they can make more money either way. In a move to offer a reduced cost Model 3 to the Chinese market, Tesla started offering their base model with an LFP battery pack, lithium iron phosphate. It's great. It takes the cobalt out of the pack as well. They're a very contentious thing to put cobalt into batteries, depending on where it's come from. Since the LFP chemistry makes for a less energy dense cell, it provides a lower range, but much lower production costs, like $60 per kilowatt hour. Like, maybe 65. Certainly that's the BYD stuff that I've seen. That move worked so well for Tesla that they are now rolling out around the world for all of their standard range vehicles. As seen that, the current US Model 3 standard range offers 262 miles of EPA estimated range for $43,500, including destination charge. So $43,490, including destination. It's unclear if Tesla will pass the savings from the chemistry switch onto its customers or pocket the difference for bigger margins. What is clear is that we'll see a range dip. But also, look, if the range does dip, also, those batteries are very durable. They like to be charged to 100%. So when you get home, plug it in, let it go to 100. That's it. Fine. No messing about with, 80%, unless I'm going on a long journey, then it's 90, and then once in a while, 100. Fully charge them. They like to be fully charged, right? And then also, although when these batteries rolled out in China and Europe a while ago now, there were some real low temperature charging issues, which I think they've sorted with software updates. I mean, it was like very, very slow, almost single digit kilowatt charge speeds, one of my listeners sent me. However, those I think those problems are largely gone. But also, they're very durable batteries. They can be charged very quickly. Actually, the charge curve can be better of these LFP cells. Don't write them off. Yes, it's cheaper. Yes, it's a little bit more boring, but it's great chemistry for those vehicles. So, that's a great bit of news coming from Tesla, right? Coming very soon, we'll talk about Audi RS e-tron GT getting a real-world range test and Aptera wanting to move to Mars. Stick around. I'll tell you more. Now, final story on Tesla today, and what about adapters? I mentioned this recently on the show, and it's now confirmed. The recently launched CCS Combo 1 adapter, which changes where you plug it into your Tesla, which has got the proprietary socket, and then you can plug a CCS Combo 1 charger into the other end of it, which has been rolled out in Korea for $255 equivalent, and it'll charge at 500 volts, 300 amps. That's loads of juice. The peak is 150 kilowatts, but you know that's okay for going through an adapter. It's now coming to the North American market, says Inside EVs. When it comes, there's no definite date on it, but the opening of the supercharging network to other EVs was announced recently, and although it'll happen in Europe first, where superchargers are already, CCS Combo 2, we have a different, it's you've still got the big two big DC pins at the bottom, but a different top end of the Type 2 plug. The date isn't put on it, but that's a great bit of news about, finally, an adapter to solve the kind of Tesla proprietary plug problem, all the P's, which is increasingly a bit of an issue in terms of charging on third-party networks because, well, I mean, EVgo, there's a Tesla connector on EVgos in the US, but still, I think they just got to use the CHAdeMO adapter, don't they, for that? So, either way, Tesla had to do their own thing back in the day, but increasingly CCS Combo 2 is the way to go around the world apart from China. Now, the Audi RS e-tron GT has beaten its EPA range, but by how much? Edmunds have tested it. Now, they say the high-performance variant of Audi's all-electric car, which is related to Porsche's Taycan. They tested the Taycan Turbo. Now, according to the EPA, the RS e-tron GT version should do 232 miles of range, 20 more than the EPA projects for the Taycan Turbo, 6 miles fewer than the standard e-tron, says Edmunds. So they put it to the test, did their real-world range test on this. Now, if you look at the Porsches they've driven, the Taycan 4S outperformed EPA by 120 miles. That's a bit bonkers. I mean, that's real world range. 120 miles more than EPA. Yeah, it's bonkers. Its official range was 203 miles. They did 323 on their real world test loop, which they do. They repeat it and repeat it. And they had in the RS e-tron GT, so the top of the range e-tron, 208 85 miles. So less than the Taycan, but still 53 miles more than EPA, 22% better than EPA estimate. The range was achieved, they say, despite the RS version's bigger wheels and tyres and more rain and more weight as well on the scales. So that is brilliant news. We knew that anyway, didn't we? We knew it anyway. Next, look about Aptera and Aptera's Luna landing on YouTube and teasing those who want to move to Mars. Let's talk about Aptera. Really fascinating company, not making vehicles yet, and it's their second time round, if you like. If you saw them on Jay Leno recently, they're making their alpha prototypes, and they'll make the beta ones next, after the two versions we've seen, the Noir and the Sol, the black and the white. Now they're testing the Luna, that's the silver version, and teasing a few, let's say, billionaires around the world that want to settle on other planets like Mars. Says Gus at Auto Evolution, Aptera's latest alpha prototype doesn't mean that production is anywhere near, though. The company announcing their lunar version simply means that they are on their way to building the next 10 beta prototypes for crash testing, the gamma prototypes, which you could think of as a pre-production car, and the delta development phase corresponds to the production vehicle next. As Jason Hill, who is a vehicle designer at Aptera, says in a Q&A on the company's website, the beta vehicles, which they're about to start making, will incorporate the packaging and the comfort improvements and refinements to the design, like the door panels and the instrument panels. The front-wheel drive version, which is the Luna, is the first example of the derivative that will do 1,000 miles. Now, they do that with, obviously, stunning aerodynamics, because everything, you know, the wheels are enclosed, the tires are enclosed. It's a crazy shape. It seats two, but that's fine. But it'll 1,000 miles. Got solar panels on it to charge the batteries. Those batteries are 100 kilowatt hours. Now, I don't know how, where they've put them, so I can't work this out. I've looked at the Aptera. They say it's 100 kilowatt hours of battery. It's a tiny vehicle. Where have they stashed them? I don't know. And who needs 1,000 miles of range? I don't know, but it's still, it's a great headline, and I wish them all the best. Next, the ambitious UK plans I talked about yesterday. Car makers in the UK mandated to produce a growing proportion of zero-emission vehicles every year. Under the new government plans to cement the transition to electric power, phasing out the sale of fossil fuel from 2030, the policy is the backing of campaign groups like Transport and Environment. Now, I saw a lot of kickback yesterday about mandates from people saying they're not needed, let the car companies do it at their own speed. As I replied to one Twitter thread with the president of the Automobile Association, I replied to him saying, because he was saying, look, mandates aren't needed, but that's fine. I said, but doesn't a mandate provide a direction of travel? So if you're running a car company that is investing billions of dollars and you look after the balance sheet, all you want to know is, where are we going? And we'll work out how to get there. But where are we going? Regulatory wise, what's the regulatory landscape? Where are we going? And then let them work out where to invest their billions. And I said, isn't a direction better than no direction? Even if you don't agree with a mandate, like X percent of your cars must be all electric, isn't it good that the government is telling, through regulation, car makers, hey, this is the direction of travel? Well, Greg Archer, who is the UK Director of Transport and Environment, said today something similar, but better than I did. He says, more importantly, it gives clarity and certainty on how many EVs will be on the roads in the coming years. And we can plan for how many charge points are needed, how many mechanics to train for EVs. It's a step in the right direction, he said to the Guardian newspaper. Well, with transport now the single biggest sector, at least here, for carbon emissions, dominated by road vehicles, phasing out petrol and diesel was a clear thing that the UK had to do. 2030 is more ambitious than other countries. According to Tim Schwannan, who is the Director of Transport Studies at Oxford University, he says that EVs are disproportionately used by middle-class households. It's a point that the government is silent about. Most of the subsidies to date have benefited households that, in theory, don't need them the most. And this actually completely ties into how I ended yesterday's podcast, which was, yeah, EVs are a middle-class thing, right? If you're buying an EV, you're not worried about how the money's going to last to the end of the week. Like, you're not putting electricity on a, you know, a credit meter, going down the shop and loading money on your Lecky meter, right? And hoping it lasts to the end of the week. If you're buying a brand new EV, that's not you. And yet, if we want everybody to be driving electric vehicles, we've got to help every part of society. We have to do it. Right, let's move on. One way to get people into EVs is just to let them drive the damn things. And that's what some dealer networks have been doing around the world, this time the Greater New York Automobile Dealers Association, the GNYADA. The GN Yada hosted a ride and drive event 2 days ago to showcase the latest EVs and talk about the future of transportation, says QNS.com. The event put on by the dealerships hosted 24 of the latest EVs supplied by local car dealers. The cars on tested were tested on closed tracks in their parking lots. New York is planning to ban the sale of gas-powered cars by 2035 at this stage, as Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill amending the state's environmental conservation after it passed the state's Senate and Assembly back in September. And great, more EVs, more EV dealerships could be doing this with EVs. And, you know, I would do it if it wasn't an insurance issue with me. If I could get the insurance covered sensibly at an event, I'd say, come and drive, like, just come and drive my car. Come along, have a play. I don't care. Like, it's insured. So that's the best way to get people into electric vehicles. Get them into electric vehicles. And when they go, oh, it's like another, like a normal car, right? Yes. It's just normal, except it runs on a different thing. People really have a light bulb moment, and that's what we have to do more of. Like, Fully Charged, a few weeks ago now, was amazing for that. It felt so good when I was at Fully Charged outdoors to see the huge queues of people lining up to take a short test drive just around the area that we're in pretty much everything. I think I saw everything. Everything on sale today. I think I saw it, apart from, well, Tesla weren't there, but Tesla would do their own thing, but the Owners Club were there. So that was fine. And, man, it was so good to see. I know, if you're going to Fully Charged, you're kind of, I mean, you're not converted, as it were. Like, you might still be driving petrol and diesel and you're EV curious, but still, yeah, it's great to see. Right, question of the week with eMobilityNorway.com. When buying a used EV, how do you feel about servicing? Do you want the previous person to have been back to the dealer every year? Do you care? Now, some makers like Tesla don't even have an EV schedule. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about service histories? Email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com. Thank you so much to our premium partners of the podcast. Thank you to everyone in the Patreon family. But our premium partners get a daily mention, you guys. Phil Roberts of Electric Future. Brad Crosby. Thank you, Brad. Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati. Audi of Cincinnati East. Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East. National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK. And eMobilityNorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.